Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Zyn nicotine pouches deliver nicotine satisfaction anywhere, anytime, which means Zyn pairs well with you, your personality, your schedule, and your spontaneity. Zyn fits easily into your bag, pocket, and into your life because it's smoke-free, hands-free, and hassle-free. So the only person who will know you have a Zyn pouch in is you. Visit Zyn.com or head to your local convenience store today to find your Zyn. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
School of Humans.
On August 3rd, 2009, just before midnight, an OnStar satellite service got a notification of an emergency from inside a Cadillac Escalade that had crashed. The vehicle had plunged off a cliff just off Walker Trail in Sevier County, Tennessee. The OnStar service called 911 and police responded to the scene. They found a bent guardrail. The car was in the middle of the woods, so it was hard to get down to the crash scene. Deputies had to rappel to the bottom of a 125-foot drop-off. When they got down there, they saw the black 2007 Cadillac Escalade. Inside the twisted metal wreckage of that car, they found the body of 40-year-old Shannon Hurcutt. At first, the Tennessee Highway Patrol said Shannon had died in a car accident. It seemed like a tragic fatality, but nothing more than that. But a few days later, Shannon Hurcutt's manner of death was changed to homicide. Local authorities said someone had beaten her to death, then put her inside the car to stage the accident. Shannon was well known. She was friendly and outgoing, a successful and well-liked local businesswoman. But according to her own family, she was also someone who had a lot of secrets. There had been family feuds and legal battles related to her business, and possibly, some people suggested, maybe even a secret lover. Now, over the years, this case has been covered multiple times. It's been covered by local media, national media, and even Dr. Phil. And every time I hear about this story, the same narrative has been put forward. But as you all know, I want to go behind the scenes and see what we can do to take this case forward. Who killed Shannon Hurcutt? I'm Catherine Townsend. Over the past 5 years, making my true crime podcast, Hell and Gone, I've learned there's no such thing as a small town where murder never happens. I've received hundreds of messages from people all around the country asking for help with an unsolved murder that's affected them, their families, and their communities. And now, they have a new way to reach out. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Hell and Gone murder line at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145. This is Hell and Gone, Murder Line. was contacted about the Shannon Hurcutt case by a listener a while back. As always, we start with victimology. We want to know who Shannon was and what was going on in her life in the time period immediately before she died. Shannon Hurcutt was born in Sevierville, Tennessee, on May 22, 1969. This is an area that gets a lot of tourists. It's in the Great Smoky Mountains, and it's near Dollywood, Dolly Parton's theme park in Pigeon Forge. Shannon's mom, Patricia, ran a general store that she opened up in the early 90s. It was called Antebellum's. Eventually, Shannon went out on her own. She opened up a real estate and rental business, also using the family business name. Shannon's business was called Antebellum's Realty and Rentals. It was in Pigeon Forge, near where she grew up. Opening this business was a very smart move because over the years, the demand for rental properties skyrocketed in that area, and Shannon did very well for herself. She was in charge of renting out around 130 cabins. She also oversaw other projects, including the opening of a local playground called Mount Ton of Fun. In media reports, Shannon is described as single and happy. She never married and didn't have any children. But she had a lot of friends and was active in her town and in her church. One of her relatives in an interview made a comment about Shannon being strong-willed, which can sometimes mean if someone's very opinionated, perhaps that could point to them getting into conflict with people. But a lot of people said that Shannon was generally very well-liked at work and that the people who worked for her were very loyal to her. But her life wasn't perfect. At the time of her death in 2009, Shannon was dealing with difficult relationships with several different people. As we often see, big success sometimes brings business rivals or threats of lawsuits and people wanting money. One of the people Shannon was feuding with was her own father, Ted Hurcutt. Again, over the years, everything that I've read about this case has seemed to have the same narrative, that a lot of people suspect Ted and that he totally denies that he's involved in his daughter's death. So now we fast forward to August 3rd, 2009, in the hours immediately following that car crash. On that day, Ted Hurcutt had an alibi. At the time of Shannon's murder, he was almost 400 miles away in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, with his wife, Shannon's stepmother, Anita. His other daughter, Shannon's sister, Penny Stevens, was also nearby vacationing with her young daughter. Later on, when Ted and Penny appeared on Dr. Phil in what was a very emotional and memorable episode, Ted told Dr. Phil that he got a call from his former son-in-law, a guy named Jerry Stevens, who used to be married to Penny and who apparently worked in law enforcement. Ted said Jerry called him to break the news that Shannon's body had been found. Penny got the news on the same day, and she later told reporters that when she heard what happened to her sister, she immediately thought that this could not have been an accident. Ted said he also immediately suspected this had not been a traffic accident. There were some details that just seemed off, like the fact that Shannon was not wearing her seatbelt when the car crashed. Apparently, she always made a point of wearing her seatbelt. Her family also wondered why she would be driving in that area alone late at night, which was definitely not a part of her regular routine. But most crucially, when the car was found, both the driver's side and passenger window were down. Both Ted and Penny, his daughter, agreed Shannon would never have those windows down because she was obsessive about keeping her hair perfect. And obviously, in that high humidity, having both windows down with the wind blowing in her hair was just not something that they said Shannon would ever do. If she did have to go out after dark, she would have those windows up and she would have the AC blasting. Police ruled Shannon's death an accident, and they didn't want to do an autopsy. But Ted insisted. He refused to sign a form allowing Shannon to be buried. He also called a friend of his, a guy named Jerry Grubbs. Now, Jerry was a retired National Park Service ranger who also worked in law enforcement and later became a private investigator. Jerry said that he found physical evidence at that crime scene, physical evidence he said was overlooked both by the sheriff's office and the Tennessee Highway Patrol. In a video that Jerry posted on YouTube, he films the area where the car wrecked and says, based on how that car was found, he thinks that it basically did a straight drop. He said that if the car had been traveling at any rate of speed, it would have been airborne, and it would have been found way deeper in the forest. There was also no real damage to the windshield and no skid marks from the tire tracks at the scene, which presumably meant that no one slammed on the brakes to try to avoid an accident. Later, a team went in and they found out through looking at the car's electrical system that Shannon had only been traveling at 7 miles per hour before the crash. She wasn't even going fast enough for her airbags to deploy. Ted told reporters that Shannon's injuries did not appear to have come from the car crash. He said at the time, quote, "The paramedic said her head had a gash in it the size of a grapefruit, and there was nothing inside the car that could have made that gash," end quote. At that point, the sheriff's office investigators finally agreed to an autopsy. And when that autopsy came back, it became clear that Shannon's injuries had not happened in the car accident. Police said someone beat her to death at her home, put her inside that car, and pushed her over that hill. Cause of death was blunt force trauma to Shannon's head. And the manner of death was changed from accident to homicide. Hey, y'all, it's Catherine. As you know from Hell and Gone, crime can happen to anyone at any time. When it comes to home security, your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. That's why I recommend SimpliSafe Home Security. Obviously, we cannot control everything that happens out there in the world, but when I'm in my own home, I feel very reassured by the fact that I have a home security system. And SimpliSafe is affordable, easy to use, and crucially, it's easy to get started with and then build on later as you need more functionality. They have a huge variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, with no contracts and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/hellandgone. That's simplisafe.com/hellandgone. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Three days after Shannon's body was found, police finally went to her house to look around. Shannon's sister, Penny, went to her house too. She was there to pick out an outfit for her sister to be buried in. She later told Knox News that when she arrived to that house, she saw that some things in her sister's residence seemed to be out of place. She saw a baseball bat in the back of Shannon's work truck. She also saw what appeared to be blood on the refrigerator that was in Shannon's garage, right by the handle. She told the news station, quote, "I did notice two wine cooler type bottles on the floor, busted, and that was it," end quote. There were also no signs of forced entry. Police had a few theories at this point, but no real leads. They considered the possibility that it could have been an angry client of Shannon's, someone that she had a business dispute with. But Penny made it clear that she had another prime suspect in mind for Shannon's murder. Their father, Ted Hercutt. So let's go back and look at the family relationships. Penny and Ted appeared on the Dr. Phil show in 2015. And on that show, it's immediately clear that there's a lot of animosity between Ted and Penny. She told Dr. Phil that since she was very young, her father had been behaving in extremely disturbing ways. She said he'd been emotionally abusive and that he was greedy and a pathological liar. And when Ted Hurcutt came out and tried to hug his daughter on stage, she refused to touch him or have anything to do with him. Reading between the lines, it seems like the bad blood between Ted and Shannon got worse after Penny and Shannon's mother, Patricia, passed away. That happened in 2008. Patricia died after a long battle with cancer. She had been divorced from Ted for several years by then. After Patricia's death, Shannon inherited a piece of land from her, a piece of land that was apparently worth about $1 million. Shannon and Ted got into a legal battle for that land. They started fighting after Patricia's death, so about a year before Shannon was murdered. By the time of Shannon's death, Ted admitted that he and his daughter were estranged. They were not talking at all. They were only communicating through lawyers. So what was really going on with Shannon Hurcutt's will? In 2003, Shannon made a will and she left 29% of her estate to her father, Ted. But in 2006, Shannon made another will. And in that will, she specifically mentioned that it was her wish that neither Ted nor his wife would inherit anything from her. Now, Penny claimed Ted was furious about that, about the fact that Shannon had cut him out of the will. But Ted has always totally denied that. Penny has always said that her father's motive in killing Shannon was money. But who really gained from Shannon's death? Because we know that Ted didn't inherit anything. Now, to explain this, Penny said that Ted didn't realize Shannon had changed her will, so he would have thought that he might inherit something from her. Ted said he never expected anything from his daughter's will and that he never needed any money from her. On Dr. Phil, Ted looked genuinely shocked when Penny stated bluntly she believed he had hired a hitman to kill her sister. I believe that Penny is sincere. I think she is convinced that her dad had something to do with Shannon's death and that she was afraid of him. And if you watch their interactions, it's clear, in my opinion, that there's something about Ted that seems off. At certain moments, he appears to be unhinged. I also think it's possible that he's lying about a few things, like the weird vandalism of Shannon's business that happened back in November of 2009, just a few months after Shannon's murder. On November 20th, Pigeon Forest Police responded to shots fired at Shannon's business, Annie Bellum's Realty and Nightly Rentals. Someone had shown up there and started firing shots into the front door. They fired off 8 rounds in all. Penny said her father had confessed to her that he was the one who shot up the business. And when Dr. Phil asked Ted about this, he kind of sidesteps the question. It does seem like he could be lying about vandalizing that business. The Dr. Phil show had a lot more family drama on. They also had Ted's third wife, Jan, who he married in the summer of 2014. After just 3 weeks of marriage, Ted got an annulment and the marriage fell apart. Jan told Dr. Phil that Ted had what she called a dark side. Now, I've been on Dr. Phil before talking about the Ebby Stepick case, and so I actually know a lot about how this process works. I spent several weeks with the producers doing in-depth research and giving them information about what was going on with the case, and I knew this in advance. Of the information that I gave them, they only aired a tiny portion of it. They do that for a lot of reasons. First of all, there's very limited time to present the case, so you can't go too deep into the woods. But also, and this is not an insult to TV producers, but their primary purpose is presenting the story and making good TV. It's not really solving a case. So instead of going deeper into suspects, what we got on Dr. Phil was more family drama. Because then Ted came on again and he said Jan had a criminal history and that she had stolen $8,400 from him and stolen his credit cards. There's a lot more family drama that plays out on the show that I'm not going to get into. But at the end of the episode, my takeaway was that Dr. Phil seemed to come to basically the same conclusion that I did. He said, Ted may be an asshole, but that doesn't mean he's a killer or that he hired a hitman. He kept saying the same question I was asking, which is, what's the actual evidence that at that moment in 2009, Ted would have had a motive to kill his daughter? With all of these cases, when you have so many crazy rumors flying around, and especially when there are complicated family dynamics and accusations, I always talk about how important it is to filter out what I call the noise of the case. And while we want to keep an open mind and not ignore any possibilities, I think that the Shannon Hurcutt case is a great example of this. We need to filter out all of the family drama and focus on the facts of the case. As we've said several times over the years, being a creep is not illegal, and it doesn't make you a killer. Ted has never been charged in connection with Shannon's murder. He's always denied having anything to do with it. I honestly think that at this point, the evidence points away from him, and there are a few reasons why. First of all, Ted was one of the first people to demand that Shannon's body be taken in for an autopsy. He got that expert, Jerry Grubbs, to go to the scene. He told anyone who would listen over the years that his daughter's death was not an accident, which does not seem like the actions of a person who killed his daughter. If Ted had been involved in Shannon's death, it seems like the last thing he would have done, especially after the death had already been ruled an accident and she was getting ready to be buried, is to go public and demand that police investigate the possibility of murder. Ted died in 2017. So if Ted was involved, whatever secrets he had would have died with him. Even now, police say they've never found any connection between Ted and Shannon's murder. If that's the case, that means that Shannon's killer is still out there. And though police have been pretty tight-lipped about the investigation so far, one investigator has said they believe the evidence points to someone outside the family, but someone who knew Shannon. He also said they believe they know the killer's motive. He made this kind of cryptic comment. He said, "If I told you what it was, it'd be obvious who I was talking about." So to sum up, I don't think that the evidence points to Ted, and at least one of the investigators on the case agrees.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Zyn.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Let's move away from the family drama between Ted and his daughter Penny and back to what we know, back to the crime scene. With the evidence, we know where the car crashed. We know that this was a staged crime scene. The real crime scene took place at Shannon's house, probably in her garage. Then the killer, or killers, tried to make it look like a car accident. The real crime scene took place at Shannon's house, probably in her garage. We know this because Shannon's sister Penny saw smears of blood on the outside refrigerator that's in the garage. That's also where she found the two broken wine cooler bottles. Shannon was beaten to death. Then the killer or killers put her in her own car and tried to make it look like a car accident. Like the investigator said, to me, the crime scene and manner of death point to someone who knew Shannon well. There are a couple of possibilities. It could have been a crime of passion. But from my other podcast, Red Collar, I know that sometimes fraud detection homicides, murders where the motive was money, can also look like crimes of passion. So let's explore the hitman theory. A lot of people have made the comment that if this was a planned hit, it was a very sloppy job. Apparently, that's not that uncommon, though. Former FBI criminal profiler Frank Perry, who wrote the book Red Collar and White Collar Crime, which was about red collar criminals and had a whole chapter about committing murder for hire, wrote that often killers who commit white collar crime and then who kill to cover up their fraud, often when they hire killers, they kind of go cheap. They don't have much money, so they'll go with really amateur killers instead of hiring professionals like the mob does. They hire people who basically are unemployed grifters, people who are floating around doing illegal or semi-illegal kind of stuff. And often when they do hire these amateurs, the amateurs will tell a lot of people what they've done, and that's how they get caught. If this had been a professional hit, the killer would not have left behind so many obvious signs of staging. They would have cleaned up Shannon's garage. But most crucially, the thing that makes me move away from the hitman theory is the fact that I went back through the literature. When red collar criminals hire hitmen, every single example I could find involves the killer bringing their own weapon. It's not impossible for a hitman to come to someone's house and not bring a weapon and then stop to drink a wine cooler with the victim, but it seems very unlikely. The only exception to this would be, of course, if the hitman was someone Shannon knew. The hitman theory isn't impossible. We have to keep an open mind. But in my opinion, with everything that we know, it seems more and more unlikely. Whether a killer is financially motivated or whether they're motivated by something else like jealousy or rage, the reason why they kill is to solve a problem because they're losing control over a situation. So if the motive for Shannon's murder was financial, we need to look at who could have benefited financially from Shannon's death. After Shannon died, Penny Stevens, her sister, and a first cousin of theirs named John Madewell inherited Shannon's real estate business, Antebellum's. They started running the company together, and according to the last information that I found, the company is still around. As of a few years ago, at least, the cousin, John Madewell, was running the business with his wife. I just want to be clear, I don't think for a second that Penny was involved in her sister's murder. I think she comes across as genuinely distraught, someone who loved her sister and wants to get justice for her. And she's also been the one who has been very vocal about keeping her sister's case in the public eye over the years. But I think there's someone we might be overlooking. Was there someone who was involved in a business deal with Shannon? Again, this is pure speculation because no one has ever suggested this, but could Shannon have found herself caught up in some kind of fraudulent behavior, or was someone defrauding her and she was threatening to go to law enforcement or to sue that person? I'm making this point because right now, when you look at the evidence, there's no obvious windfall. We need to follow the money on this case. We need to see if there were any lawsuits pending, exactly what was going on in Shannon's business at the time of her death. In addition to the money trail, we need to go back again to the staged crime scene, which in my opinion is our biggest clue so far. In a publication called Collision or Collusion, Homicide Staged as Car Accidents by Claire Ferguson, which was published in the National Library of Health, the author describes 16 homicides that were staged as car accidents. The descriptive analysis examined common staging behaviors and victim, offender, and offense characteristics. Her findings indicate that staged car accidents present differently than real accidents. And in a nutshell, every single thing that she mentioned sounded like it could have been taken straight out of Shannon's case. The article read, quote, "They often involve single vehicle, slow speed, downhill scenes with middle-aged female victims. Physical damage to vehicles is usually minimal, except for fire damage. Common offender behaviors include transporting the body to a vehicle, mutilation of the body, arson, and cleanup. The results suggest these efforts are often unsophisticated and potentially identifiable to investigators and physicians," end quote. I think we need to focus more on Shannon's private life. We've heard from her sister, and her sister said that Shannon did not tell her and her mother a lot about certain aspects of her life, that Shannon had been a private person. While investigators were focusing on the car crash scene, the real crime scene, in my opinion, was back at Shannon's house. Of course, it wasn't properly processed in the beginning as a crime scene. Remember, Penny arrived at the house when the police started their investigation. Both Ted and Penny said there were two broken wine cooler bottles on the floor of the garage, which were totally out of place because Shannon was a neat freak. Her family members said Shannon never would have left her house looking like that. I wonder if Shannon was seeing someone, maybe a current or ex-boyfriend, someone who hasn't been mentioned as a person of interest at all. And with all this family drama, someone who's been flying under the radar all this time. Shannon was officially single, but again, her sister Penny told reporters that Shannon was secretive about certain aspects of her personal life, that she didn't tell certain things to her or to their mom. So what do we know about crime scene staging? Again, we have no access to the police case file, so we have to go back to my bookshelf. We need to go back to what we know about crime scene staging. According to the excellent book, Crime Scene Staging Dynamics in Homicidal Cases by Dr. Laura Petler, the most commonly staged crime scenes are done in cases of domestic violence or intimate partner homicides. Crime scene staging happens basically to serve the killer's needs, not the victim's. It happens because the victim and the offender had a relationship with each other. We can also surmise the killer knew the area. At least they knew it well enough to know where there was a cliff, a place where they could push that Escalade off. The area where she was found, Walker Trail, is over 5 miles away from Shannon's house. So that means whoever did this presumably put Shannon in the car and then drove her vehicle to the spot where they pushed it off. This is a huge risk. The killer would have to feel reasonably confident that they weren't going to pass anybody on the road, or if they did, that they wouldn't look out of place in that car. Dr. Petler, in her book, points out that while there are words for crimes like matricide and patricide, there's no real term that covers a person who was intimately involved with a victim but not married to them. She says she refers to these murders as intimicides. Someone who is intimately involved with the victim, and this can include close friends who are crashing on a couch, or potentially people who are dating the victim or sexually involved with them, also ex-partners. Another study of homicides staged as car accidents investigated 115 cases. Now, admittedly, this is not a huge group, and definitely a lot more research is needed in this area. But again, they found in over 80% of the cases, the killer was the domestic partner or former domestic partner of the victim. In a lot of these cases, the killer used blunt force and basically beat the victim to death. In Shannon's case, police were very quick to classify her death as an accident based on the crime scene. And this is a common mistake that law enforcement make a lot. They focus on crime scene analysis very early on. They need to go back to victimology. They need to get more knowledge about what's actually going on with the victim at the time of death. So when we're trying to figure out what happened to Shannon Hurcutt, we need to keep an open mind and always be curious. We need to ask ourselves, why would someone stage the scene that way? Because they did it for a reason. Maybe it was because they didn't want to be the person who would have to report her missing or to find her body. Maybe it was because they didn't want to have their 911 call analyzed. So we need to know more about who was in Shannon's close circle. Maybe an ex-boyfriend or former lover. Maybe someone who, if they were the person who found her body, would have aroused suspicion with the police. We need to talk to the people closest to her. Who was Shannon's best friend? Who was in her circle? Who knew about her personal relationships? If that person is out there, we haven't heard from them yet. Sevier County investigators have said this case is still open and still actively being investigated. There is still a $45,000 reward in place, still available for any information that will lead to the arrest and conviction of whoever killed Shannon Hurcutt. Anyone who has information, I ask that you please reach out to the Sevier County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigation Division at 865-428-1899 or TBI at 1-800-TBI-FIND. I'm Katherine Townsend. This is Hell and Gone, Murderline. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Hell and Gone murder line at 678-744-6145. Hell and Gone is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts. It's written and narrated by me, Katherine Townsend, and produced by Gabby Watts. Music is by Ben Solee. And this episode was scored by Miranda Hawkins. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, and Elsie Crowley. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Hell and Gone murder line at 678-744-6145.
School of Humans.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.